The time is 3:06. Up next on KSTO, call me. It's hour two of the Dr. Future Show with your host, Dr. and Mrs. Future.
Yes, yes. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. This hour we have Gregory Panos checking in from CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, one of the largest electronic shows on the planet, with all the latest and greatest stuff that our brilliant species has thought up for us to play with. To give you a specific focus on Gregory's interests, he's more involved with the virtual reality, augmented reality world, and is collecting deep information on that topic as a source guide for the industry, creating the next generation media involving VR and AR.
Hey.
So, yay, Gregory, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Yay.
So, virtually.
Yeah, so do you see any biotech stuff there, like gut bacteria machines that would make it easy to do a colonoscopy and get the right bacterial count at the same time?
Yeah, if they were, they were off in the corner.
No bio, huh?
Near the restroom.
Yeah, you're probably right. So CES, huh? Was it bigger than ever this year? Was it really?
It was a mob scene.
Really?
It was just gigantic. It was impossible to even somehow effectively economize your time to see everything.
Yeah.
But I did pretty well. The interesting thing is over in the Sands, they had a lot of startup companies and Indiegogo companies and companies on Kickstarter.
Oh, interesting.
And they were just row after row after row after row. And I'd say about 10% of them were virtual reality or augmented reality companies, maybe 15%. And then others were other kinds of practical manifestations of various technological advancements in smartphones and the like that are beginning to hit the market or making sense to people for applications.
Interesting. Let me just point out that at the New Paradigm conference that we went to, they said that the economy that is going to be totally solid and growing is everything related to your cell phone. Like, you know, think a planet with 7 billion cell phones. And by that, I think they mean, they call it the 3.0 economy. It's the electronic connectivity economy, which of course includes all of the gear for AR, VR, and the content for those kind of digital experiences.
So did you see any specific...
A lot of money for that now.
So that would mean then, Mrs. Future, that there should be some really interesting entrants at CES involving smartphones with VR. And what did you see there, Greg?
Well, I mean, you're right to make the assumption that our smart devices are the logical extension of our conscious human will.
Yeah, if you're just going to carry one device, what's it going to be?
Right. And then, you know, all the other things we sort of casually look at on our devices feed the big data model to intuit what is not our conscious human will, but to sort of predetermine what our human will would desire and sort of slipstream it into our consciousness. The interesting thing about some of the manifestations at CES, some of the products that are being sold, they're sort of tangentially on the border of what it is you would wish for or hope for in a future device. So health applications, things to manage your time and your food and your exercise and your relationships, you know, are all becoming more refined and beginning to be run native on these various smartphone platforms.
Yeah, so the smartphone is getting smart. What about direct VR experience with a cell phone? Doesn't Samsung have something out now?
Samsung, they released a project. It's a handset. It's called the Rink, iRink, I-R-I-N-K. Mm-hmm. It's a little grip that you hold in your hands, and it has IMUs in it, which are inertial measurement units that detect motion in any direction and tilt and other kinds of positional information in real time. It allows you to put on a Samsung Gear VR, which is a headset that accepts the Samsung phone, and that goes into VR mode. And then the iRink you hold in your hands, and that allows you to select things in virtual reality or sweep through menus without using a traditional game controller or waving your hands in midair in front of the unit, having some kind of camera, intuiting what your hand gestures are. It's a physical device, so it can vibrate and give you other kinds of feedbacks while you're manipulating it in the virtual space. And it charges up by itself and it pairs with the phone.
It's really nice. Though, you know, it's not considered high-end VR or the higher stuff that you're getting with Oculus Rift, which is coming out, I mean, what is it, 6 months from now? The cell phone stuff is good, and it's wireless. A lot of it's wireless, right? So you have the freedom, but you don't yet have the quality, the 4K. Isn't it 4K visuals that are coming in with the Oculus Rift?
The problem with mobile VR and using a smartphone platform to generate the imagery
is the amount of power you have available.
You keep running up against limits of the device itself.
The wireless limitations, but wireless is ultimately worth it, but it's going to be more limited than the wired versions. Though I imagine the highest wired versions would probably use fiber optics, you know.
But. Well, all the action right now is how to figure out to get the most complex visuals onto a head-mounted display.
Right, with wires,
taxing
right?
Without putting all the onboard computing and making the display
into the headset.
Generate all that.
Yeah, you keep it out from the computer, off your head.
Yeah. So what you're seeing in VR is computers that are really souped-up gaming machines that are tethered with a wire to the virtual reality system. So you either have a seated experience, standing experience. You have what's called room-scale VR. Those are the three aspects of VR.
Also the audio. You sent me a link on some new audio because a good part of the experience of being somewhere else is the audio.
So all the audio experts and companies that supply products into that market are all looking at 3D positional audio that can track your head and make the sounds appear anywhere
where you see them. Right. So
right,
it feels
anywhere in
alive.
Your acoustic space, behind you, above you. Those could be synchronized with visuals as well. So if someone's playing an instrument in front of you, you hear them in front of you. And as you turn your head around, it moves to your back.
Initially it'll kind of reflect normal reality. I think we'll start playing with that as it evolves. But that's exciting.
The supplementation of the normal human senses is sort of the
exactly extension of our senses, if you will.
It's also the horror.
It's potentially, that's true.
Where are the kids, honey? They're in VR. Well, get them out of VR. I don't do that. I won't do that.
Well, what you have to do is go in the VR world and tell them it's time for dinner.
That's right. And then a lion will attack you and eat you.
You even talk to them.
That movie.
The lion wall.
Yeah.
As opposed to their firewall. Okay, listen, we've got to go for a break. If you could hold on for a couple minutes, Greg, we will get back to CES.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for being here. We'll see you in a minute.
Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Gregory Panos on CES and some of the highlights there that particularly got his attention.
Hello
there. Welcome back.
Yes.
Hey, Gregory, one of the things that I'm fascinated with is social activities, schmoozing parties where people get to meet each other. And I'm wondering about the possibilities of putting such events in virtual space. And perhaps eye contact. Eye contact would be very important for socialization between people. Is that something that's possible in virtual reality? Did you see any evidence of that at CES?
Well, everybody's working on it, and there are a few demos here and there. Basically, if you're wearing a headset that covers about a third of your face, there needs to be some sort of technology that can sense whether you're smiling or frowning or your lip movement or wrinkling of your nose in order to control a virtual persona or an avatar of you that's being broadcast to someone else that you're having some kind of conversation or communion with.
Your actor in the virtual world, right? Whoever you want it to be.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, you can click on a list of various mugs and smiles and weird things that could be in a playlist. But
it's like an emoji kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's easier to just have it track your face and then one-for-one correspondence control your avatar that the other person is experiencing using your own facial motion.
Right, like the Vector actors of the 90s.
Able to accomplish that with a little camera that sort of dangles off the display that's looking at your lower mouth and nose and everything.
Oh, so it's just tracking that aspect of your motion.
Right. And then there's a link that I put in the page with all the links from CES that I thought were interesting.
Which is, by the way, in our links page, drfutureshow.com/links.
Right. I made a Flipboard, which is kind of a nice little magazine format to look at some of these
things. Yeah, it's good. It works well.
And there's one company that's got a clothing that you wear that senses if you touch it or if you move your arms around and the like. So you can input body information that way.
Your own physical body?
Yeah. There's another company that has little sensors that you place around the periphery of the virtual reality unit that squeezes against your face. And it determines whether you're winking or your nose is wrinkling or your eyes are opening or closing using a very simple type of fabric, conductive fabric, that is wired together with a bunch of different channels. So it's actually really, really cheap and easy to do and very fast. I don't think it would be something you'd want to use in a shared VR experience, because the problem with shared VR is as you share a headset from one person to another.
Well, I don't know. But look, you know, if you're talking facial expressions, I mean, we all use them all the time in our daily social activities. So it would seem like it would be very natural for us to go into virtual space, see somebody, actually have eye contact with them, and see their facial expressions. It seems like the most natural, elegant thing to do is to mirror our current social behaviors into cyberspace. Once we do that, then we can branch out to all kinds of whatever we want. But the smooth transition for human dynamics into virtual space seems to be, I think, the first step, or at least for
me. Facebook and Apple and Google have been gobbling up companies in this space that have been pioneering this space for the last 15 years.
Okay.
And they're all disappearing into a black hole because everybody realizes what we're talking about, how this is exactly what's needed, and they need to be on top of that. When they launch the Facebook social experience in VR, of course they want avatarism to be a major component of the experience for everybody. So they have to follow all the facial tracking tech, all the various, you know, glue-on sensors and the like that are pre-existing that could easily be repurposed in VR.
You know, I'm not sure everyone quite gets how big this is yet, but from what I can see, this is as big as, if not bigger, than the invention of the internet itself.
Yeah.
you know, that's how, I mean, we're going to go from just texting and looking at pictures on the net to actually living in another world, living, like being, breathing.
This is as big as TV dinners.
Yeah, man.
Well, let me just take a moment here to plug one of my favorite books that I think gives a pretty interesting fictional preview of this, which is, of course, The Maze Game by Diane Slattery, which is a world that is basically moderated by a computer AI.
Yeah.
And all of the people in the world are tied into each other and the world through their screen. And their screen allows them to either spectate and watch any channel anywhere being broadcast by anybody. It allows them to broadcast themselves into that space so that they can be watched by anybody anywhere. And it allows them to teleport themselves at the molecular level if they have enough permissions. So, you know, that's kind of the sci-fi view of where we're going, is into connected smartphone holodecks.
Well, I used to give talks about the provenance of science fiction being the progenitor of all things AR and VR that we're seeing being developed today.
Yeah, I can make a case for that too, but I think nature as well, don't you think, is an inspiration for us?
You could literally spit anywhere on a science fiction bookshelf and pull the book out that you hit and find some pages in there where they're describing exactly what it is, maybe in a little bit different terminology, but the concepts, we sort of got it a long time ago. The science fiction writers certainly got it. That was their vision of the future.
Yeah.
So, you know, here we are, you know, heading headlong into the future.
Where it'll actually happen, and we'll actually go into other worlds, and then we'll have to grapple with the idea of who we are, and we'll start getting into a species-level awareness of who we are beyond all the current boundaries and structures of nation states and families. It's going to redefine humanity ourselves, you know, in a profound way. I think Brett Leonard was calling it, for his film he wants to do on the topic, the global human.
Yeah, story worlding, he called it.
Story worlding. Story worlding, yeah.
I like that term. I heard him say that.
Because you're not just telling stories, but you're creating worlds in which stories.
And, you know, just in terms of bringing in another one of our cultural heroes, Terrence McKenna, we just discovered an old tape where we first met him and interviewed him, and he was showing us his worldview and his novelty generator device machine.
Yeah, he was wondering what if in virtual reality whether you can portray the transcendental object at the end of time.
But he said this really interesting thing about how humans are looking at our evolution a little bit wrong, because we think that our evolution depends on this 3D reality and the six senses that we already have, and then sort of exploring the universe with that model. But what he actually believed is that our mind is the multidimensional reality that allows us to see the rest of the universe as it truly is. And we need to be cultivating the tools that allow us to cultivate infinity through our conscious awareness.
Yeah, the physical world is limiting our brains. What we see with our senses is a small part of what our brain can actually process about the nature of reality. So if you give it a virtual world that has more dimensionality to it than everyday reality, then the brain likes that and will wake up to its higher potential, because it will be seeing more dimensionality, which really does exist.
Yeah, I agree. I think our clever evolution to use these technological resources to augment our senses gives our brain the exercise in various ways that it requires to actually grow its capacity. And if you do a PET scan and MRI scans of the brain trying to solve tasks, even geniuses trying to solve tasks, they come to the determination that only about, like, I don't know what it is, 5 to 15% of the brain is being used. So what about the other 85%? That's not being used to breathe and to walk about and to eat and, you know, move your hands around. That's sitting idle with all this extra capacity.
Didn't I just see a movie on this?
Didn't we just see a bunch of movies on this?
No, the one with her.
Her.
Oh, right.
It was their next movie about evolution after her, and it was all about using only 10% of your brain, and that when you start awakening up to the rest of it, you get cosmic pretty fast.
Well, right. Pretty interesting. But, I mean, that's an obvious direction for an external construct, but for an actual biological construct of a human brain, obviously evolution has limited, for some reason, how much of our brains we're able to use. Who knows whether we'll actually be capable of something like telekinesis and thought transference without language and everything else. Our brains might actually be able to do a lot of that stuff.
Scarlett Johansson, that's it.
Yeah. Well, and VR might be a way to train it, and AR might be a way to train aspects of our brain that we've never been able to access or exercise or grow.
Okay, well, after the break, let's get more into the difference between AR and VR, just to clarify that. But, Sun, you have a question?
Well, I was just thinking, Greg, you said that somehow our senses have been limited. I would put it the other way around. I think our senses have evolved to the level of cultivation through use. I think that by using the intelligence that is available through different parts of our body, we grow the brain into those dimensions, and that's really how we're going to benefit by having technology enhance our tools. That, you know, we have this amazing apparatus, and we have a life force that is infinite in some ways in many bodies that are giving themselves as much opportunity to feel good as possible for as long as possible, and that we evolve new tools as we have opportunities to use them. It's not that we're limited in the past, it's that we haven't emerged into our full potential.
Oh, definitely. And our own evolution is more on a linear path, and the evolution of our technology is more on a exponential path.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a moment here and go to CBS News break. But actually, we're going to hear a couple of things from our sponsors first. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. More interviews with our
guest,
Greg Panos, and insights about VR reality, CES, and the future. Stay tuned.
Dr. Future.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Greg Panos about VR, AR world and what happened at CES. And I do have a question for you, Greg.
Yes.
Now, if this is as big as it seems to be, you know, something as big as the internet, if not bigger, and the beginning of the microcomputer revolution with Bill Gates versus Steve Jobs and Wozniak and that whole chapter that we're all intimately familiar with, is there an equivalent type of ecosystem of people evolving around VR, AR? Is there a Bill Gates there? Is there a Steve Jobs? What's it look like?
Well, it's interesting to see what's happening. I mean, these days there are so many AR and VR meetups and conferences and events. This Saturday in Los Angeles, VR LA, which is the meetup in Los Angeles, is having their biggest meetup yet. I mean, it'll be thousands and thousands and thousands of people at the LA Convention Center. What I'm noticing, as these events put together their speakers and their panels of experts and geniuses and gurus and the like, they really don't refer back to the people from the 90s or some of the old
men. No, it's a whole new thing. But I'm wondering, is there the equivalent of a Bill Gates today or a Steve Jobs in the VR world? Like, who's Lucky, for example, for the uninitiated?
Well, Palmer Lucky's 23 years old. He grew up in Long Beach. You know, like 10 blocks from where I live.
10 blocks from you. That's funny.
Yeah.
He's probably born while you were thinking about this in the first generation.
Yeah, he's a really nice kid, a nice person. I mean, he's a young adult now, and he's really smart and really sensible about what he says and very careful. He's very optimistic. He's got a lot of hands-on with his company.
Okay, so was he the geek or the businessman?
He's the geek and the spokesperson and the evangelist. This is kind of a young version of me, although I never started a hardware company back then. And nowadays, you know, with all the technology being much more accessible and less expensive, a young person like him has a much better chance of creating an innovation and bringing it to market.
And didn't he actually create a headset in which you didn't get sick? Where you could go into a virtual world and feel okay and feel like you were enjoying it. Isn't that part of his contribution to this field?
Well, he knew that was necessary, and he started from the get-go to try to innovate that problem away.
And Oculus Rift supposedly achieves that, and that's going to be released this year.
Yeah, he was able to do that by getting higher frame rate and better field of view and a few other things, low latency for motion.
Yeah, that's quick reaction time. It's, my understanding, when we're working with the racing drones friends, it's like under 200 milliseconds. When you move and something happens is less than 200 milliseconds, your nervous system thinks it's you.
I mean, we have a persistence of vision threshold, which is about 30 frames a second with our eyes.
To where it seems continuously, right?
Yeah, our neurological system is able to determine with a greater level of fine granularity state change information when something changes in our sensory field or through other means of us perceiving it, even better than our vision system. So anything that feeds information into one of those other senses or to us somatically in some way has to update at a very rapid rate. Otherwise, the nervous system will detect it.
So is 60 frames per second for visuals better than 30?
I think the threshold for VR is, 80 or 90.
80 or 90, okay.
Yeah, so they can build a system with 80 or 90, and it minimizes a good deal of the simulator sickness that comes from visual.
Would that include 3D worlds?
Disparity.
Yeah,
most VR is essentially a three-dimensional experience where each eye is getting a shifted image. Some people that can see in 3D can benefit from that. The 5 or 10% of people that can't will enjoy VR, but not in the same context as if they could see depth information. But it's essentially a depth-based experience using both eyes.
So I got a question for you. Is there a danger of addiction with this technology?
Well, I tried on a VR system from HTC called the Vive, which I like very, very much. I'm very excited at the fact that there are multiple players that are going to be serving technology into the marketplace. So HTC's already, you know, hit the bricks running. They have their newer system out there. That there were quite a few of them at the show showing different kinds of demonstrations. And I had a chance to try one on at one of the big nightclub parties and spend probably 10 minutes in it, painting in three dimensions in a room scale VR experience. So basically I was tethered, and I had to be careful about my cord as I crouched around and flailed my arms about in the three-dimensional space trying to make a Van Gogh using all different kinds of virtual paintbrushes and the like. But it was really phenomenally exciting and fun. Artistically, I was creating a space around me with all these, you know, beautiful fire and rainbows and swirls and stars from these menus of things that I could very rapidly select and deploy into the space about me using both of my hands.
Was this like a augmented reality where you saw the real space around you as well as this layer of effects, or was it purely virtual?
It was purely virtual unless I got near one of the boundaries or the wall, in which case the camera on the VR unit reses in imagery from the wall with a grid overlaid over it. So you know that the wall is right in front of you all of a sudden, and that there's a grid there and you can see the wall. But as you back up, the ability to see the wall disappears, and now you're completely in the immersed experience.
Well, I like that as an interface. It's like you're in the VR world, and when you get to the boundary in the real world, it shows up as a virtual world.
Right. So that, cool. Yeah, the system knows where you are in the room. And when you get near some place where you shouldn't be, it sort of organically blends in of the warning information that you require to understand where your boundaries are.
There's something about it that's like a dream within a dream that I really
It's really cool. When you get a chance to try it, you're going to be blown away and you'll be so excited over what's going on. And one of the things that has occurred to me has been, I don't have to work very hard to make this happen anymore. You know, back in the 90s, I was pushing people and I was wrenching their arm and trying to talk them into building a better, you know, this or a better that, or bring such a thing to market. Nowadays, there's so much going on and there's investment money sloshing around in a very large pool where people can create a startup, and if they're innovative and they've got all the right stuff, they can get funded very easily. So with all this parallel and co-development and all the development going on at the companies that are trying to supply VR, it can be just a spectator technology where you wait long enough and everything that you imagine could happen or you would think is necessary, someone will come up with it.
Okay, well, let's look at your list of what's happening now with this technology. You mentioned something called GearOptic, a 360 cam. It's like a little camera that mm-hmm. takes 360-degree pictures. Is that it? One shot, you get the entire world?
Yeah, it's actually, there are lots of different cameras, 360-degree cameras that have multiple cameras in them, and they look like a ball with, you know, 9 eyes or 12 eyes or 14 eyes.
Well, different models. So there's a lot of experimentation in trying to capture.
Yeah, or a cylinder with 25 GoPros going around.
Now, for folks out there who are not familiar with this idea, is that 360 video is where you, say, have a 360 camera on a little stick you carry around with you above your head, and it would capture the entire experience of your world as you walk around and do things. It would,
right.
And then you can play it back later and look not just in front of you, but behind you. It just records everything.
And it's a spectator experience in that your center is always the viewer of the camera. So you can't go any place the viewer didn't go. But when you're in the center with the viewer, you can look all around you.
Yeah, and I would imagine that this will evolve to where it's live, and that there'll be certain people who want to put their life online, and they'll just walk around with their stick, and you can plug into their world whenever you want to. Or you belong to a club if it's a celebrity, and they can charge for the privilege of them seeing your point of view of the world.
I wrote a short story a long time ago called The Surfers, and it was about guys that they put on their instrumented virtual reality acquisition surfing uniforms, and they go surfing every day, and they're acquiring a full three-dimensional stereoscopic experience of surfing.
Oh,
and
nice.
They're beaming that out into the world.
Very nice.
And then, you know, the rich fat cats on Wall Street are sitting in their offices trading
surfing
bonds, and they're having the same experience that the surfers are having in Maui.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, it's just a job for them. Every day they go out, they put their technology together, they go out surfing, and they come back, they get paid for it, and that's their everyday existence.
Well, what's next? The surfers
it's
wearing?
It's kind of like a blue-collar job for them.
What a great frame for the new reality is that the customers are the people sitting in VR taking it in as the pain-free spectators, the armchair travelers, and the economy is people just living their lives and sharing it.
Yeah, and I wonder what the surfers would wear. What kind of VR gear would they don?
Let's just hope they have shark repellent, because there'd be an awful lot of people horrified very far away.
Well, there's a certain audience there.
All right. Hey, listen,
those would
folks
probably be the most traded experiences, the ones
right
that went wrong.
Oh, I like that idea. You trade experiences. I'll take an hour of your day and you take an hour of mine. Hey, listen, we're about to go to a break. Stay tuned, folks. We're talking to Greg Panos here on the Dr. Future Show. More to come.
VRAR, stay tuned. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about AR, VR, and CES, and other assorted initials. on the Dr. Future Show at this point.
And let's remind people that you can call in. Greg is wide open to questions, and he's a great resource.
Yes. If you want to know any particular detail about some of this gear or concepts even, Greg's just a luminary in this field. I understand there's some breakthroughs in the drone world there, too.
Oh, there were some interesting drone advancements as well. One of them was the Ehang, which is a personal drone that you can climb into. It looks just like a regular quadcopter, but it's only about 25 feet long one direction.
Big enough to carry somebody.
Yeah, so you step into the little pod and you take off. But obviously, it was just a display. I didn't see it working, but they said that it worked.
They said they're not allowed to fly it in the U.S.
Yeah.
The FAA regulations. They haven't quite figured out how to deal with such craft yet.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting idea.
You don't have to fly, right? You just get in, and basically the drone flies you where you want to go, ideally.
Mm-hmm. So you were talking about the gyroptic camera. The interesting thing about it, only has three cameras. Each one is a fisheye lens, and they're equidistantly separated into like a little ball. It does all the stitching internal to the camera of those three images into the navigable video that it broadcasts or can save out to a file. That's the minimum. You can get away with two of them. Ricoh has a Theta. It's a handheld
Ricoh
360
Theta.
Camera. Yeah,
with two fisheye lenses.
Yeah, it's one fisheye on one side and one on the other side.
Yeah.
But this one has three, and they're sort of in a triangle. And apparently it gives really, really great coverage, and it's got a lot of other great bells and whistles, and it won all kinds of awards at CES.
When was that called?
The Gyroptic, Gyroptic.
Well, it looks kind of cute. It looks very Euro in design.
It's a French company.
Ah,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Another exciting thing that I saw, which was in the VR, AR area, was a company from Israel called Lumos, and they're making optical engines and optical glass that uses waveguide technology. You've mentioned the Magic Leap company, which is another VR company that's coming eventually with a product to market.
Just to give the audience a little background on that, the Magic Leap is another approach where instead of putting on goggles, it's an augmented reality where you see a layer of virtual space imposed on your vision system.
Right.
That's another layer.
There are a number of companies in Israel that are developing these kinds of advanced optics.
So you can do AR better.
Yeah, it looks just like a pair of glasses. And you can't see what's on them by looking at somebody wearing them, but they can see a very bright, very high resolution image that can come from a computer or video or anywhere else onto those lenses from the side. It uses a microprojector array built into the frame of the glasses, and then the glass itself is cut with nanotechnology where it takes all the imagery coming from that microprojector and it fans it out to the field of view of the glass. What we can expect from this in the future is AR and VR all in one visor or thing that you wear.
Mm-hmm.
And the VR is accomplished just by occluding the outside light, basically putting a little shroud or a little windshield on it that you can't see through. And the device itself generates all the imagery in the same way a VR system does that, except you can also see through it transparently, selectively, and that in an AR context will overlay information into the real world that you're looking at.
Well, that seems to be actually the best of all worlds to me.
Right.
Because you can, if you just think of the computer world as a layer to your image, you can turn it off or on and combine it with what already is going on in the world.
The problem with these advanced optic solutions right now is they're very expensive. So the Lumos we looked at was $3,000.
Oh, yeah.
The ODG, the Osterhout AR system, which is commercially available, is another $3,000. So these optics that accomplish what it is that we would think to be natural at this point in time are very, very expensive. And it's much cheaper to buy for $600 or $700 a VR system that you just put on your head. It uses more traditional displays and optics to accomplish a good deal of what you need experientially.
Well, this may reinvent cinema, because one of the great things that always differentiated cinema from television was the level of the widescreen and the level of artistry in the content. And I know, like, our film director friend Brett is very much expecting the cinematic experience to be way, way, way better than the general consumer experience when it comes to the standard for the VR technology that is embraced.
Well, there's certainly a lot of inertia to overcome from the traditional film community. They're not very quick to adapt to new technologies, and the lingua franca, the language of VR filmmaking, has yet to be invented. There's lots of experiments going on. There are lots of people that are trying things out.
Have you seen anything?
Well, they're the new kids on the block.
Okay, well, what about in that level
Sundance
of Hollywood? I'm more interested.
I'm
more interested myself in who is doing the best job at creating something with real emotional content. Something where you can really relate to, and you can laugh, you can cry, you can join in to the experiences of those that are in that world. What's the closest you've seen there?
Well, some journalists have taken up VR to tell the various stories about the things that they're witnessing in the world. So there have been some things that have shown up at Sundance and elsewhere. Noni de la Peña down here at USC, her company Emblematic Group, they're kind of the darlings of trying to innovate the virtual journalism aspect of VR storytelling, and they've done a wonderful job of putting together various...
What's her name again?
...stories. Her name is Noni de la Peña.
Noni de la Peña. Okay.
Right.
Good. We'll check
that out.
Because that's the big thing, is that how do you tell a story in this world?
When
you
have they call her the godmother of VR. They're calling her the godmother of VR.
So she'll be another character in this pioneering field.
I love all these familial references of various people in VR. There's the grandfather of VR, which is Mort Heilig, and the son of VR, who was Jaron Lanier.
Yeah, and Brett calls himself the silverbacked gorilla of VR.
Brett's the silverbacked gorilla of VR. I call myself the unmarried uncle of VR.
The unmarried uncle, hey. So you're looking for
a lot of time on my hands to play with this stuff.
No, right?
Not about any kids.
You think meeting others, you know, the dating game will be more interesting in this world, in the worlds?
Well, the adult entertainment industry is just salivating at.
Well, that's another world. That's true.
Scenario I'm sure that, where everyone has one at home, and then they could serve them content.
But I'm talking about meeting people that you might want to hang out with, or you want to be in relationship with. I mean, what can you do in the virtual worlds that isn't being done now online? So what new experience or what level of connectivity might we be able to have?
Well, I think when VR becomes more ubiquitous, I think everyone will appreciate the ability for them to source all different kinds of technologies and experiences, be they video conferencing or Periscope type video or audio only. And all these various experiences will be pulled into VR. You might have 10 billboards in front of you, sort of fanning around you with different people all talking, which if you're looking at something like the Google Hangouts, where you have a hangout with a bunch of different people in it.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. But I'm thinking of more, how could you have something like the equivalent of a hot date in a virtual world?
Oh, well, that's an interesting idea.
Okay.
Here, maybe this is a good segue for me to plug somebody that we like a lot, a fellow named Richard Bro, who is the strategic advisor for Overture. He is the founder and CEO of this company called Wemersive. Wemersive has been doing some 360 panoramic VR videos at festivals and, you know, just fun places to go on a date. He's been creating some really fun.
So he creates a context by which you can hang out with somebody.
Yeah.
So the hanging out could be live, and you could create these various contexts to play.
Right.
Right. So sports events have already looked at this, where you're sitting up in the boxes, and then you can automatically like fly down to the playing field. So if you have 360 cameras all over the stadium in strategic locations, and they're all streaming their point of view, and you can dissolve from one point of view to the other very rapidly as a user wearing an immersive headset, it's like running around the stadium, you know, transporting yourself from one end of the stadium to the other in a tenth of a second, to see the action that's going on in that particular area.
So could you have a hot date at a live football game?
Yeah, you
like
could go play
A's game. We're going to meet you at the A's game.
Huh? The demos I've seen are designed to allow people to collaborate in a space and watch the game together or watch the movie together and be able to communicate if they want to by talking or by typing or with some other means with a video.
I like this, reinventing the Super Bowl Sunday by having everybody bring their VR goggles and sit in a seat somewhere in the stadium and be able to switch seats.
I like the idea of being able to go places and do things and not have to smell anybody's cigarette smoke.
Or body odor.
or body odor, yeah.
Forget those microbiomes.
So compelling content. And of course, I believe last time when we had Kate Russell on the show.
Well, she had a very nice undermining.
Yes. Well, I just remember sometime during our conversations with her, different people had explored the VR worlds of porn that were going on, you know? And so, of course, this just, like, was a big question mark to me because it seems so silly, you know, that why are you doing something that's, like, fooling your eyes and ears that involves the rest of your senses? I thought it was interesting. You know, people will try anything, right?
It's funny you mentioned that because an article ran recently about a porn company that's starting to digitize all their actors in 3D.
I've been to go in five seconds, Greg.
Okay. Yeah, I've been talking for years about the next holy grail of VR, and that's to basically place yourself or a reasonable facsimile thereof in VR.
Yeah, put yourself in the world. Okay, thanks, Gregory.
Thank you.
Gregory Panos. We have links on our page, drfutureshow.com/links.
Great.
Thanks for
Bye-bye.
Listening. Thanks for being here. Talk to you soon.
Into the future.